Comedy Live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who would not have left the edge of extinction without at least lining up a few podcast interviews first. I am Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome to our recap of episode number 7 of Survivor Winners at War. And we got a really fun show for you today. We're going to talk with Chrissy Hoffbeck here from Survivor 35, Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, on the podcast today, and looking forward to hearing what she has to say about everything that's going on in this final episode before we hit the Survivor merge next week. First up, let me just say that I hope that you and your family are all safe and all doing okay during this crazy time that we're all going through, and excited to have a nice diversion of a week of Survivor to be able to talk about with you today. We had a lot of fun on the Know-It-Alls last night with Steven going through everything from the episode. If you ever missed that, you know, come on. What are you doing? Would you skip the Know-It-Alls and go right to this podcast? Come on. Check that out as well. I have Karishma coming up on the weekend, where I will talk with her and get your feedback questions in. Get your feedback questions into the show. Rob@website.com/voicemail or 323-282 RHAP. You could always email the show, survivor@robhasawebsite.com, and Puya Zambakili of our Masked Singer Rehab will join us on this week in Survivor, not to mention the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday. So a ton of stuff going on here in our Survivor world. Plus, I'm also going to have some bonus podcast coverage this week, where I am going to be talking Tiger King with Bryce Isaiah. That podcast is coming up right after this one. So hopefully I'll have that out to you guys on Friday. Tiger King on Netflix, if you want to binge it overnight to get ready for talking to the Purple Pants King on Friday. Before we get to calling up Chrissy, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at ZipRecruiter, who say hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy because you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/survive. ZipRecruiter is going to send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. And they can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter out candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, our listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/survive. That's ZipRecruiter.com/survive. S-U-R-V-I-V-E. ZipRecruiter.com/survive. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guest, somebody that I get a ton of requests from the listeners to hear from on the podcast. We've never done a recap episode here together, so I'm very excited to bring in, from Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, the great Chrissy Hoffbeck. Chrissy, how are you?
Hey, Rob, thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm doing great. I'm doing great in the time of Corona.
Yes.
I'm
okay.
Managing.
Yes. First off, yeah, give us the update. Everybody safe at your house?
Everybody is safe. Everybody is home. So the boys were in college. You know, I got the call and I had to go pick them up the next day at college. And my daughter, you know, obviously is now doing high school from home. My husband is mandatory work from home. So the 5 of us are happily at home sheltering in place here in New Jersey.
Okay.
So it's going all right. It's going all right.
It's going okay. I know you guys are doing a lot of binging of TV shows at your house also, right?
We are. So our family plan is that during the day, my husband and I are working, my kids are doing their school, and then at night we make dinner, and then we're binging Breaking Bad right now. So that's fun. Yep.
the classic family show.
Our parents in here, I guess.
Yeah.
It's really not. And you know what the worst thing is we're picking up the lingo. So now I'll go in the kitchen to make dinner and I talk about my cook stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm going to cook, yo. Yeah. And you know, we're having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. Okay, so when you say you cook for the family every night,
I actually mean dinner. I don't mean glass.
Yeah.
Right? Now I know the lingo now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Anyway, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Okay, well, so. You know, we were planning on seeing you in New York for the live show, and ultimately we had to, of course, cancel this with everything that's going on. But I was glad that you were able to have some time to talk to us here after an episode.
Yep, thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to talk about this. So,
okay,
you know, I love my show still.
Good. And so you've, just from following you on Twitter, you've been very much enjoying season 40, correct?
I am loving season 40. I'm loving the gameplay. I'm really enjoying all the people who are playing. I think the editing is great. So, yeah, I mean, I think that season 40 is living up to the hype for sure.
Okay. Chrissy, I know you also are very busy, that you have a book that's coming out later on this year called Winning Strategies. And it's not a Survivor book, right?
It's called Winning Conditions.
Oh, Winning Conditions. I'm sorry to get it wrong. Okay.
I'm sorry.
I have Survivor on the brain all the time. Winning Conditions, which is very important to Survivor. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been working on?
Yeah. So Winning Conditions is not a Survivor book, although you could definitely take some of the strategies that are in there and apply it to Survivor. But it's actually a business book. So the tagline is how to achieve the professional success you deserve by managing the details that matter. So the idea of the book is that the amount of success that people have is not only automatically or necessarily based on the work that you do. Right? It's not based on necessarily on whether you do great work or deliver great solutions or great ideas or whatever you're doing. But a lot of times it's also based on the way that you deliver that work in order to make other people feel that they want to recognize you, celebrate, trust you, give you a seat at the table, promote you, right? All of those great things. So it's this idea of how do you set up the conditions around your work to enable you to win. And a win is not going to mean we're going to make everybody Warren Buffett. A win means you're going to be better off than you were yesterday. Okay. With whatever it is that you're doing. Yeah. So that's what the book's about.
Good. Well, I just want to have that as a backdrop because I'm sure it will dovetail into a bunch of things that we're talking about. I want to bring up something that you said on Twitter that a lot of people, perked up when you said this, that back about a year ago during the Edge of Extinction, you had tweeted out that you said, hey, I think that this Edge of Extinction, this is just a dry run for what they're going to do for Survivor 40. You planted your flag, you called your shot, and you turned out to be 100% right. How did you know this, Chrissy?
Okay, so first of all, I'm an actuary. No. I don't know. I guess just watching this game for so long, I just was thinking ahead and I thought, you know, if we're going to have an all winners, they're going to want a way to keep people around. And I just felt like we were going to need a test run to see how it was going to go. I'm not a fan of The Edge. I'm definitely not a fan of The Edge, even in an all winner season. But sure enough, we're seeing it again here. So. Mm-hmm. I do think, by the way, that The Edge played into what happened in last night's episodes. When we get to that, I will talk about that.
Okay, well, go. We're here.
Go for it.
Yeah, tell us.
Okay, so when we think about the vote last night, right? Why did Wendell and Nick and Yule not vote out Michelle? Or why did Wendell and Nick not vote out Michelle? I think it has to do with the dynamics that are happening at The Edge. So early on in the game, a lot of the old school players this is my opinion. Okay. This is the world according to Chrissy Hoffbeck. A lot of the old school players started getting voted out for various reasons, right? Amber's voted out, I think, because she's married to Rob, who's on the other side. And Tyson is voted out because he can't make the merge because he has his alliances on the other side. And there's various reasons that people are sent home. The problem is Yule was the only old school player left in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that The Edge is right now is every single person that's left on The Edge, right? They didn't know that Sandra quit, is going to be on the jury. And if Yule makes it to the end, there is no way that Yule will lose the game with an entire jury full of old school players.
Hmm.
And so I actually think that Yule had to go. It had nothing to do with who you felt you could trust. You know, I don't think that Michelle and Nick and Wendell are thinking, who can I use on my side? Who can be in my alliance? I think what they're thinking is, we cannot go at this point. There are too many old school players on the edge. We cannot let an old school player move any further in this game because there's no way anybody else will win. So I actually think the edge kind of shot the game in the foot in that respect.
Okay, because all the old school players are already there. On the jury.
That's right. I think that if this had been a normal game where the first six or seven players are pre-merge and then they are out, I don't think that dynamic would have come into play. I think then the jury is made up of the jury, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a jury of old school players who are automatically all assumed to vote for one particular person.
Let me ask you about Sandra and the decision that she made last night where she got to the edge and said, all right, well, I'll see you guys later. Let me just get the check. I'm leaving. What did you make of Sandra's decision? Do you begrudge her at all for leaving the edge of extinction?
So I have to answer that in two parts, because how I feel about a person leaving the edge of extinction is different than how I feel about Sandra leaving the edge of extinction. I think that Sandra lives in a world of her own. So if I'm just looking at any random person who's on the edge, right? Anybody mm-hmm. else, really? Yeah, I don't like it. I mean, and the reason that I don't like it is because first of all, it sucks, right? It sucks to play Survivor. You're out there. The elements are horrible, right? And the whole thing is just, it's a horrible experience while you're going through it. And I say it's like running a marathon. Like, you're proud that you ran the marathon, but while you're running the marathon, like, it sucks, right? But it's still a gift. It is a gift that thousands of people wish they could play. Mm-hmm. Thousands of people wish they could be out there. And so I think that to give up that gift is terrible. I feel differently about Sandra, though. And the reason that I feel differently about Sandra is because Sandra just gave herself to us for season 39. Like, mm-hmm. she just was out there for that entire time. And I felt that that was a gift that Sandra gave to us. So for her, I just want to give her a free pass. Like, she just did this. We don't, you know, for her in particular, I think that I understand her reasons to leave. And by the way, I would give Ethan a free pass as well, given his situation. If he chose to leave the edge, I would absolutely give him a free pass also. But in general, I do think that if you are given the gift of playing the game of Survivor, especially as a nod to the other winners who didn't get to play, like, any of them would have loved to stay on the edge. But I do give Sandra a free pass. I mean, she is the queen. Yeah. She stays queen.
It doesn't bother me that she wanted to leave. I do wonder, though, you know, did this have more to do with that she didn't want to be around Rob and Amber, you know, after the tension from the start of the season? If maybe she was just like, hey, I don't want anything to do with these guys. I don't want to sit here with them, as opposed to, you know, I don't want to suffer and go up and down the hill and I have no chance to get back in. Like, I kind of feel like, yeah, why not just give it a night?
Yeah, I probably would have given it a night.
Given it a night.
Also, that's like a nice time that she could hang out with those people that, you know, I mean, it's an experience. But that said, I don't begrudge Sandra, considering that she's been out in Fiji for like 4 months straight at this point.
Sure.
Whatever it was.
I suspect maybe had it been a different group of people and where people she wanted to spend some time with, that maybe she would have been interested in and like, okay, let me sleep on it and see how I feel in the morning.
I don't know. We'll see. By the way, I do feel the exact same way when people sit out of, I'm going to say, individual immunity challenges, mm-hmm. not group challenges. And I know Sandra sat out of a lot of group challenges, but I don't count that because that's based on group dynamics, right? And how your group thinks that your individual skills match. But when people sit out of individual challenges, I feel the same way. I feel like to play a challenge on Survivor is a gift, mm-hmm. and to choose to sit out of that so you can eat food or whatever it is that you're doing. Like, I don't know. I don't buy it, but I'm the person who applied to Survivor for years and years and years and years. And I just know how that feels to be a fan. And then you see people who don't embrace what they're given. So,
well, I think that this ties into,
but yeah, it didn't bother me that Sandra left.
Chrissy, that I've watched your TED talk and, you know, I was very curious to see what you were going to talk about, 'cause I knew it involved Survivor, but you have an entire TED talk about what you learned about yourself because of the challenges. Can you summarize that? And of course, people should go and watch the full thing available on YouTube.
Yeah, and you can just find that like Chrissy Hofbeck TED Talk or something, and it'll come right up. Right, what my TED Talk was about was I felt that a lot of my life, I'll say I played the waiting game. Like I just always felt like not good enough today. And I was always like, oh, but I'll be better tomorrow. Tomorrow I can do this. And I always had these dreams, and I had this dream of playing Survivor. And I finally got out there to play Survivor. And I found that I was back to the waiting game. It was day two and I couldn't wait for day three. And the challenge was on and I couldn't wait for the challenge to be over. And then I couldn't wait for the next meal. And I just was playing this waiting game. And I felt like I was finally living my dream, like I lived my life, which was just waiting for the next thing. And I finally had one challenge that it was in the middle of, it was like a water challenge, right? And I had to swim against Ben, actually, and like climb up this ladder and untie some keys and blah, blah, blah. And I'm freaking out. And I was thinking, I will never win this. I will never beat him. He is a Marine. He is 15 years younger than me. And I'm freaking out. And JP looked at me and said, just dive in and swim your little heart out. And it was in that moment that I realized that I was enough. Like, it didn't matter how I did. All I need to do is dive in and swim my little heart out. And it was really a turning point, I'll say, in my game as well as my life, when I realized that all I had to do is dive in and swim my little heart out. And I did. And P.S. I beat Ben in that challenge by like a minute or something. I did like really, really great in it. And from that challenge on was really when I started winning those challenges.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, for me, it really taught you like you don't have to wait for tomorrow. You can actually be your awesome self today, you know, spurred on by, you know, then I went and wrote this book about a lot of this too, this winning conditions. But yeah, people can be more amazing than they know that they are capable of being, right? You can do way more stuff than you thought you could ever do. So sometimes you just got to go do it.
Well, Chrissy, I think this is a really important idea for so many people right now, because I think that a lot of people are at their house, like we both are, and sort of like, sitting out this period of social distancing, and probably have a lot of thoughts about like, okay, well, when this is over, I'm going to do X, Y, Z. But I think that there's also, you know, an opportunity here for a lot of people. And while, you know, I know people are sick, and a lot of people are, you know, have a lot of uncertainty in their lives, but I think there's also like a real opportunity for people to, you know, grow and learn and maybe get better at, you know, there's so many great resources that are available to people online that this is like the, you know, the perfect time to sort of, you know, learn a new skill or something that you've been putting off for a really long time, that, you know, this is, you know, an opportunity as well for people while you might have this downtime.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. I actually talk in my book about the reasons that we fall into ruts, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we fall into a rut, and sometimes you just need a few moments in your quiet time to think, how can I get myself out of a rut? Is there something else that I can do? Right now is a great time to do it. On the other hand, sometimes right now people might be feeling overwhelmed as well.
Sure.
With their health, with, you know, homeschooling their kids while trying to work full time and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I do talk about why we fall into ruts and how we can pull ourselves out of them and make ourselves better. I loved what Sandra said last night in the episode. She said something, it was the very first scene, and she said something along the lines of, you know, I know I'm so strategic, I know I can win this game, but I'm also a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about that in my book, is sometimes we fall into ruts, or sometimes we don't stretch ourselves. And it's not because we're lazy, and it's not because we're unmotivated or undedicated or anything like that. Sometimes it's just because we're human and we slip into these human ways of behaving. And once you can kind of give yourself some grace and realize it, then you can kind of pull yourself out and, you know, go do all the awesome things that you were born to do. So
yeah.
Well, yeah.
What is that thing that you're telling yourself when you say, you know, give yourself some grace? Is it just sort of like, hey, you know, I understand why I don't want to do this, and I'm forgiving myself. Is that as simple as it is?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll give you my own personal story. The one that I actually talk about in my book was back in 2015. I really knew that in my career, I needed to start doing some public speaking. Right. But I was terrified of doing public speaking. Like literally every time I thought about it, my blood pressure would race. And I always thought back to this time that I was, can I curse on your show?
Yeah.
Because there's a curse word in my answer. Okay. So I thought back to this time, I was in this big meeting and I was talking, and by mistake, I said fucker instead of factor. And this always kind of stuck with me. And then I was terrified to think about public speaking because I always imagined myself on stage talking about lots of important different fuckers. And this is like, this was seriously like paralyzed me. But I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do it. And it was all, you know, once I started studying behavioral economics, and I realized there are these human behavior things that we sink into, status quo bias. We like to keep things the same. And I started to realize that my fear was just because I was a human being, and let's just kind of try to push yourself out of it. So I started signing up for, you know, these like small speaking events and whatever, and small speaking events turned into medium speaking events, turned into, you know, large speaking events. And now I speak at events that have thousands of people. Do I still get scared? Yeah, I still get scared. Rob, I had anxiety coming on your podcast, but seriously, but I think that once you can give yourself some grace and say, it's okay to be scared, it's okay to be nervous, you can still go out and do these things. And if you make a mistake, you know what, you're a human being, like, it's okay. I think that opens up a lot more opportunities for you. So I think there's a lot of people out there that are afraid to do something because they don't want to look foolish or they don't want to make a mistake, but you have to give yourself some grace. It's okay to fail. Right. I mean, please. I went out and played Survivor after 16 years and puked in the first episode.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I got over it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Right. No big deal.
Yeah. And I know what it's like to fail because that I have probably about 500 podcasts that I'd be very happy if nobody ever listened to again. Also.
But see, Rob, I would say that you have very well set up your winning conditions, right? So I bet there's a lot of people out there who are like, I have great podcasts. My podcasts are awesome. I have awesome guests. How come I am not as famous as Rob Cesternino, right? How come I don't have as huge a following as Rob Cesternino, right? Because somehow, Rob, along the way, you figured out how to set up your winning conditions, right? So for other people, those are the types of things that they need to do. So they're, you know, they can create the empire that you have created.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Luckily, I have a very low bar for my winning conditions. If I get through the podcast and then I don't have everybody on Twitter telling me how horrible it was and everybody yelling at me, and then also basically that's my winning condition for life. If my wife's not yelling and people aren't yelling at me at Twitter, I've won.
I'm fully expecting to get yelled on Twitter after this episode airs. After you put this podcast on, you know, online.
Yeah. Well, you know, we could certainly talk about like the way that social media impacts the life of the Survivor players at any point that you wanted to get into that. But I wanted to get your take on Ben this season. And you know, you played with Ben, and you were, correct me if I'm wrong, you were with Ben. You guys were apart at the swap. You started together and then we're apart at the swap and then back together at the merge. So you spent a long period of time with Ben in Triple H. And so there's been a little bit, I think, of a shift in terms of, seems like that Ben is playing a little bit differently this season. I just want to get your take on, do you feel like that is Ben playing any differently, or do you think that we're just seeing a different side of Ben on the TV show?
I think that Ben has extremely masterfully played his game up until this episode. This episode, I think he was unraveling a little bit. But when we think back to Ben in like the first or second episode, and he starts blabbing all the information to Rob, right? Mm-hmm. And then goes back and is like, oh, that was so dumb, right? And I think that a lot of the viewers were like, what the hell is wrong with Ben? Like, that was the dumbest move. That was so stupid. A lot of people are thinking like, you know, what kind of game is he playing? I know Ben, I played the game with Ben, and I know Ben in real life. And I actually believe that was a masterful move on him. So he came out here, and what is Ben's legacy? Ben's legacy is, don't let that guy out in the woods, because he's going to find idols. He's going to make fire. He's going to do whatever he needs to do to win. He's a Marine and he's winning this money for his family. And I think that Ben knew that he needed to come into this game and majorly downplay his threat level. And I actually think that him acting like he made mistakes was a brilliantly calculated move on his part to remove all concern that Ben was a threat.
Interesting.
I know it wasn't taken. I mean, that's how I viewed it from my TV. Yeah, it was not taken like that in the public. And I think that everyone missed it. I think that that was a very strategic move on Ben's part. Ben is still in this game, not because of luck or, you know, the target being on someone else, but because he very masterfully, I believe, took the target off of himself.
I think that one of the reasons why, you know, people thought that it was so bad what he did was because I thought that he was, you know, being so self-deprecating about it, about like in his confessionals talking about like, oh, Boston Rob is so great. Sure, let me just, you know, blab out all the information. But the worst thing that I think he could have done in that spot would be to lie point blank to Rob's face at a point where Rob probably had, you know, the most power that he would have in the entire game.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. But if we go back to Ben's confessional, yeah, Ben is very self-deprecating in his confessional. We also don't know how that confessional went down, right? He very well could have said in the line, like, and I don't know, right? I haven't talked to Ben about this, but, you know, he very well could have said, yeah, my plan was that I'm playing it like this. Oh, I'm blabbing everything to Rob, you know, and it could have gotten edited in a particular way to make us feel that way. I'm just saying, I played the game with Ben and I got duped by secret spy Ben, right? Ben is a really, really good player and he is not going to lose his shit like that on day three of the game. He's just not. Now, I think what we saw last night was a little bit different, right? Because now I think what we saw in last night's episode was a little bit of the unraveling. We started seeing this dynamic between him and Adam, where Adam really can't take it anymore, right? Ben is singing about peanut butter. So I hope that he gets it together. I hope this is a blip on the radar and he can pull himself together before the merge, and the merge gives him sort of new life. But I do believe that everything Ben's done until now was calculated and great gameplay.
What's the part that you saw that makes you feel like that maybe the game is getting to him a little bit at this point?
So I think that last night when we saw the confrontation between him and Adam, I feel like the confrontation went a little too far.
Yeah.
You know, and I see the relationship that I'm seeing as it plays out between Adam and Ben is very much what happened between me and Ben. Right. Mm-hmm. We had the same situation happen between the two of us where all of a sudden, like, he just becomes unbearable. But it's happening a little bit earlier in the game now. And again, I'm thinking that next week, if the merge happens, then, you know, then he'll get it together again. But they're just, I don't know. It just was a little bit too much in your face. I'll contrast him with Michelle, who I think is playing an absolutely brilliant game right now. Mm-hmm. I love watching Michelle. I always say if I ever play again, I'm going to go back and watch season 40 and just watch how Michelle responds to people. Mm-hmm. She's so calm. She's just so calm and giving. I can see how her social game is so amazing, but that's really contrasted with Ben, who's going on a little bit off the rails right now. But I have faith in Ben.
Yeah,
I think he'll come back.
You know, just to go back to Adam and Ben, I feel like that those two styles, I think, are not necessarily as good of a match as the peanut butter and jelly. Where that could you tell me a little bit about in terms of like I feel like that if I was out there on Survivor, I feel like that you're somebody that really wants to, you know, talk everything through and go through like the plans and the contingencies, and I feel like that Adam is probably similar in that sense. Like, is Ben a big talker in terms of like okay, what are our moves, what are our options, or is he more okay, let's just this is the name, this is the plan, and then let's just stick to it?
The latter.
Yeah.
For sure. There were plenty of times that I was playing with Ben that I'd want to think out everything. You know, what if this happens? What if this happens? And his idea of all of that is you're being paranoid, right?
Yeah.
For him, sometimes things are very cut and dry. And I could see Adam, you know, potentially having a more cerebral game and thinking more about it. But I think that those two are a little bit oil and water right now. By the way, I'm love watching Adam play too. Like I love Adam on my TV this season. I mean, I loved him last time too, but I think his confessionals are great. I'm really enjoying him. I know that things got a little dicey for Adam a couple of episodes ago.
A couple of times,
and
yeah.
I'm so glad he's still here because I am absolutely loving watching Adam Klein play this game. Not that I'm looking for an adversary for Ben. That's not it at all. I'm really loving watching Adam play this game. And I was okay with the big move that he made a few weeks ago, right? It failed, but I like the fact that he tried to make a move. So that was cool.
When Adam was trying to make the move to get Parvati voted out and told Rob.
He was like playing both sides and whatever. Yeah. And P.S. I love Parv. So that was not a comment about Parvati either. Mm-hmm. But I'm just really enjoying the gameplay.
For Adam and Ben, did you feel like that was the right move when they got rid of Boston Rob 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. So again, though, I feel a little bit differently. I feel like sometimes in the same way that I said that there were some dynamics at play that we didn't see last night that got rid of Yule, and that was the fact that the whole old school was on the jury. I think there were potentially some dynamics at play with getting rid of Boston Rob. And that is the fact that everybody pretty much knows that when Boston Rob is on a season, he gets maximum airtime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when Rob and Sandra were on season 39, like I would have loved to see so much more Sandra. And I felt like every Island of the Idol segment was 90% Rob, right?
Yeah.
10% Sandra. And so who knows if getting rid of Rob had also a little bit subconsciously to do with some of those guys just, you know, wanting to just get rid of Rob. Like it's hard to have Rob around. I loved watching Rob play this season, though. I really enjoyed Rob so much more than I thought I would enjoy Rob. I kind of was like, okay, when I heard he was on the season again, obviously he was going to be on the season. I did feel like, all right, this is his sixth time out, fifth time playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, all right, I don't know. How much Boston Rob can we have? I like really enjoyed watching Boston Rob when he finished that one block puzzle in like 3 seconds. Like that was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, and even I enjoyed seeing him with Adam and Ben when they were at the water well and they were like, all right, this is the plan. I know it was the babysitting, right? Or Sarah made some comment about something on
play
steroids.
Pen, yeah.
Something on, yeah, yep. Social, I forget what she said.
Social distancing, buddy system on steroids.
Buddy
yeah.
system on steroids. That's right. I knew it was, something like that. I'm not a super fan like other people. Like I don't have this all cataloged in my brain.
Yeah, you're doing great so far.
But it was fun for me to see that. It was fun for me to see that move. It backfired on Rob, but I don't think it necessarily backfired only because the move backfired. I think also backfired because he's Boston Rob. Also, he has Amber sitting over on Edge of Extinction, right? So Amber's on the jury. You cannot leave Boston Rob in the game. If he gets to the end, he's going to win. So yet again, another reason why sending people to the jury and having an entire jury of every single person who's played kind of can do the game in.
Yeah.
You know, I think that did in Boston Rob.
I think you also touched on something, and I was getting a little feisty on the know-it-alls last night where there was, you know, this idea talking about like, oh boy, can the old school players cut it? I don't know. Like maybe the game's changed too much. Maybe these guys have lost a step. I don't really buy that. I do think that what you're talking about in terms of like people want to vote out Boston Rob because he doesn't know what he's doing anymore or that he can't adapt to the game, but because people want to, you know, that he takes all the oxygen out of the room and you're out there and the producers are probably like, hey, so what's it like playing with Boston Rob? What's it, you know? And I think that people want to say like, well, he's not that great. Let me take him down a peg. And I think that that's been the issue with a lot of these old school players where, you know, it's a trophy also to take them out.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it has nothing to do with their style of gameplay or the fact that they can't keep up. I think that's a narrative that they're pushing on our TVs to also account for the fact that the Edge of Extinction is robbing us of the old school players. Mm-hmm. But again, I feel like a number of them were voted out early on for other reasons. And then it was like this rock started rolling and we couldn't stop it. And the more old school players got voted out, the more old school players needed to get voted out until we got to Yule last night, who simply could not stay in the game again, another day, I'll say,
yeah.
Because he can't possibly have a shot at that $2 million. Like he'll win.
Let me ask you about this tribe that Yule was a part of, the Sele tribe, which has now gone to back-to-back tribal councils, started with six and then had another tribal council, they started with five and then had another tribal council and went down to four. You were in a small tribe like this after the swap in HHH that, if I have this all correct, right, you guys were in three tribes and then you guys swapped to three tribes also?
That's right. That's yeah. right. Yeah. So we were three tribes of six. And then when we got down, no. Yeah, that's right. And then after the first three people were voted out,
like
then
we three tribes of five.
Three tribes of five.
Which I think is unusual. I don't think there's ever been another season. And I'm sure my mentions will be dead now if I am wrong about that. But I think that that is a unique way to start the season and then swap to three tribes from starting it at three tribes. So you were in the same exact situation. You had you started with a tribe of five. You guys went to a tribal council and voted out Rourke. And then you guys had to go back to a tribal council just like this group did, and then voted out Ali, and again correct me if I've got anything wrong.
No, but that's exactly right.
So can you just describe a little bit of what that's like going to a tribal council with four people?
Yeah, I mean, the hardest thing about being at a tribal council with four people is there's nowhere to hide, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to go one way or another, and you're hoping that you're in on the right conversation. And again, you're hoping that you're going to keep the right person so that when you head into the merge, that you have your people, but you don't know when the merge is happening, right? So they know that there's four people and they have to vote out one, but they don't know that the merge is necessarily happening tomorrow. Maybe they're voting out a person and needing to go into a challenge. So who do I save then? So, you know, it's tricky. The whole game is tricky. You know, Yule was on the wrong side of the numbers last night.
Do you look at Yule as a similar player to yourself at all? Because I feel like that Yule, you know, that his reputation is somebody that he's very, very analytical, you know, that he was asked about, like, you know, how often are you looking at the numbers, which is like your thing also. And I just felt like that maybe that's a similar type of player, you and Yule.
Yeah, I mean, so certainly what I love about Yule is that he does sort of analyze the situation and he thinks 25 steps ahead. And I did all that, you know, too. Where I think Yule lost it maybe last night a little bit. Now, again, I don't think this is why he got voted out, right? I think he got voted out because the old school players were sitting on the edge and they needed Yule over there too. But Yule gave a long soliloquy in tribal council. Like, even I got lost. Like, I'm in the business mm-hmm. world too, right? And I was a little bit lost with what he was saying. And I feel like he was really talking above the level that most human beings exist on. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't know that that's the best strategy. Sometimes I think that you need to really be more part of a group with however the group is. You need to sort of act like the group, certainly in Survivor. But yeah, I thought that was a little much. I got a little confused with his whole idea of how he's going to get a fire token back. That was a little in depth. But I do like the fact that he's trying everything he can. You know, he's thinking about all these things.
Yeah. I think that for Yule, he seems so focused on Poker Alliance. Okay, there's all these people that have these connections. We need to, you know, root out all, you know, we got to vote out Amber. She knows Rob. We got to vote out Tyson. He's got the poker connection. But I think that ultimately, yeah, he might have been on the right track of the people with the pre-existing relationships. But I think that there was, you know, this pretty big pre-existing relationship that he wasn't factoring into his equation of Michelle and Wendell, where, you know, yeah, these pre-existing relationships were going to play a big factor in things. And I think that that was the biggest thing working against him, is that the reports of Michelle and Wendell not being able to work together might have been really exaggerated.
Well, I think they definitely were exaggerated, because we also know that Michelle gave Wendell a fire token, yeah. right? That wasn't really explained. There has to be something else there that we are not seeing that would have encouraged Michelle to either, you know, to give Wendell the fire token. Why did that happen? Either they're closer than we're led to believe. Maybe the you know, what they're putting out there is just for everybody else so that, mm-hmm. you know, nobody thinks they're together. I don't know. Maybe there was a deal that was made that just wasn't shown. I think there's a lot that was shown. You know what I thought was really interesting last night is we see this scene where Yule approaches Wendell and says, look, you know, I want to talk about what you said at tribal council last night. Right. I thought that I didn't like how you were making the deal with Parvati. It made me feel like this. And I want to talk to you about it. We never saw Wendell's rebuttal or excuse on why he did that. All of a sudden, then it cuts to the next morning and all we see is Wendell apologizing, but we never actually get his explanation.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what was that explanation and why didn't we get to see it? I don't know. So I just feel like there's a lot more dynamics that are happening, right? We only have 42 minutes in an episode, but there's a lot more dynamics that are happening on that tribe that we are not privy to as the viewer.
Yeah. I think that for Wendell, I think a lot of this like weirdness with Michelle, I think has to do with, I think he's really trying to downplay. He doesn't want to be seen as, you know, an item with Michelle. Do I sound super old by saying an item? Is that?
No, wait. Aren't I'm older than you. Yeah. So you sound just fine to me, Rob.
Sound good. Okay. All right. But
yeah, I don't think an item. I think we're supposed to say that they kicked it.
They kicked it. Yeah.
They kicked it.
I just think that he was very concerned about, hey, if everybody sees us as a couple out here, then this is going to be really bad. And I think that maybe the issue here was like that he did not communicate to Michelle. Like that's necessarily what his concern was, where she's like, Wendell, why are you acting so weird around me? And he's like, what? I'm not being weird. I'm not doing anything. And I think he really did try to play that up at that tribal council of like, hey, I don't care. I'll vote out Michelle, whatever. You know, it doesn't matter to me. Like, it doesn't matter if I had a relationship with you. And so, I don't know what he could have told Yule if that's really what he was trying to do, because then it seems like in this episode, Michelle gives him a fire token, you know, and I went back and I watched this morning before we came on, and the conversations that Michelle and Wendell are having, Michelle looks right at Wendell when she's talking, but you know, when she's talking with Yule, she's like looking, she is not looking at Yule. She's like talking about like, okay, whatever, you know, tell me what you want to do. And Yule's talking and she's just like staring off into the distance. It seems like her body language is like way different in terms of like where she wants to be working with. She tells Wendell, you just tell me whatever you want to do, I'll go with.
And then she said the same thing to Nick. She said, tell me who to vote for and I'll follow you. She said the exact same thing to both those guys. Yeah. She did not say that to Yule, which was very interesting. Michelle's playing a great game. But you know what else is interesting? And, I hate when people go on and they always talk about their old last seasons, right? I'm going to do that again now. Is I know that there were some times during our seasons that when you want to lie to another player, right? So let's pretend it's you and me and Steven, right? And we're playing and you and me decide we're going to blindside Steven.
So we make up some lie, but we're going to tell Steven, right?
Okay, so pretend that. So you and me are going to vote together. I'm going to say, okay, tell Steven that we're voting for Rob. Okay, so I go over now and talk to Steven in this whole setup conversation where I say, Steven, we are voting for Rob. Blah, blah, blah. We can't stand him. We're voting for him, right? Sometimes those are the scenes that are shown to the viewer.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was a setup, right? We knew that we were doing it. So I don't know how much of what we're seeing of Michelle and Wendell not liking each other is any of this them playing that game where that is the lie they are telling to make other people believe it. And in the meantime, they're making the viewer believe it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. But certainly there's something else going on there. I think they care for each other. And I mean, as a human being, I don't mean in a romantic way. I think that they care for each other as human beings more than we are being shown. In real life, Michelle and Wendell are both extremely caring and loving people. So I think it's in their nature to want to care for people.
In thinking about this a little bit more this morning and after the know-it-alls from last night, you know, I was talking with Steven about how like this made no sense. Why do these guys that they've got this relationship with Yule and they've got the relationship that this ties back to their majority from the original Dakal tribe, like strategically this does not make sense. I get it a little bit more for Wendell because at least, okay, I've got this existing relationship with Michelle. I didn't understand at all why it makes sense for Nick, but I was thinking about it a little bit differently today. That Chrissy, do you think that these guys would maybe look at Michelle and say, oh, well, Michelle is a great person for me to go to the end, where they're sort of like, you know, Michelle's been very vocal about this of, oh, people feel like that maybe my win, I wasn't as deserving as some of the other winners. Do you think there's a chance that these guys are looking at Michelle and saying like, well, oh, people won't vote for Michelle because her win is not considered to be as epic as some of the other players, and then for these two guys who are from the newer seasons are saying like, well, I know I'll win in the end if I take Michelle there.
As opposed to Yule,
who, has a much more of a legacy if he gets to the end again.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel, and maybe I'm putting my own feelings on this, but I feel like coming into this, a lot of people had monkeys on their back, right? And for mm-hmm. the old school players, it's that they're the legends, that nobody wants them around because they're these legends. They're going to take all the screen time. They're going to be so amazing and blah, blah, right? The new school players, though, I think that the monkey that they have on their back is like, they're new school players, and sometimes new school players are just discounted. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that one of the reasons that Nick and Wendell want to keep Michelle around is she also is a new school player. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised when we get to the merge if we see the divide happening by seasons, mm-hmm. right? So will we see, you know, the Michelle, Adam, Ben, Wendell, Nicks sticking together against the, you know, Sophie, Kim, Denise, Tony, Jeremy types? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd be curious if we see it that way. So it could just more be that Michelle is in the same boat as us. We're all newer players, and they're looking at us all the same way. I think the newer players are going to have more of an uphill battle just mm-hmm. because they're newer. Yeah. Because, you know, they haven't been legends in our minds for so long, right? So I think that could be part of it, wanting to keep their numbers.
And I definitely agree.
Yeah, I can't imagine that it's how they're viewing how Michelle's win went down. Michelle is playing a masterful game.
Well, that's why
I think from what I'm seeing on the TV.
A dangerous game that they're playing to potentially say like, okay, let's take Michelle to the end because we'll definitely get votes over Michelle because, sometimes it's if you are banking on what the jury is going to think based on the previous game, I think that there's a good chance you can get burned. And so we'll see how it all plays out. But in terms of like the new school players sticking together, I do think that you make a really good point, and I definitely feel like, especially like that they're from a like a younger age group. Wendell's a little bit older than Nick and Michelle, who I think are in their late 20s, but I think Adam is going to jump right to those guys as soon as they hit the merge beach.
I think he is too. You know, I'm curious to see what happens with Sarah. Have we talked about Sarah?
No.
I think Sarah is like the star of the season. She was so awesome last night. That whole scene. Like, I think she stole that entire scene with the idol find. And I know that Adam was the one saying, I think that Sarah and Ben has it, and Adam and Ben were bickering, but Sarah, oh my gosh, Sarah was, I thought, absolutely fantastic. I am loving watching her, and she's a person that I'd be really curious to see which side she banked with. I think she'd be smarter by sticking with sort of the, you know, the Kim, Denise, Tony, Jeremy, you know, crew.
Mm-hmm.
But gosh.
Okay, well, tell me about
really
Sarah.
Enjoying her,
because I want to know that felt like that she was good. She was good TV, or you felt like that she played that situation really well.
Know what, I think her personality is coming through, or I'll say they're just giving her a different edit, right? Because these people are all the same people, but I think she is absolutely hilarious. Well, last night when she's like, oh, I'll look for the idol in Sophie's bag or something, I don't know, she made some comment, I think I laughed out loud. I think she's great. The whole Cops Are Us thing with making her putting the ashes on her face was funny, and smelling Tyson's breath. I think we're seeing this side of Sarah that is fantastic, and the fact that her and Sophie came out again last night with Yule's two fire tokens. I mean, mm-hmm. they are playing great. Yeah. I am absolutely loving watching Sarah play.
Yeah. Sophie and Sarah are in a really good spot. And I talked about this last night in terms of how's their reaction going to be to voting out Yule? Do you think that they are going to be annoyed that somebody got taken out from the original Decal numbers? Or do you think that they're going to be able to just say like, okay, well, we get it. Yule's a threat. He had to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Yule leaving hurts Sophie much more than it hurts Sarah. Mm-hmm. So he was one of Sophie's people, and it's hard
her
to
nerd
lose
shield.
Your people. Right. Yeah. I mean, they were close. And I think that Sophie and Yule had a lot in common when they both said, you know, we're not really baked into the Survivor community in the fact that they didn't have a lot of pre-existing relationships before they came into this season. They both said that. Sarah does, though. Right. Sarah is a newer player. She's played with these people before. She's in your Rotten Coconuts Fantasy Football League. Right.
Yes, so yes. Yeah, you retired, right? from the Fantasy Football League. Right?
I had to. No, I retired from, but Shane took my spot, and I think he did well this year, right?
Yeah, he did do well. Yes.
We did better than I did last year. I don't know. I think last year you beat me out by like, I don't know,
it was
a
close.
Point or something.
It was close.
I can't remember. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I think that Sarah has a lot more relationships than Sophie does. So I think they're going to be disappointed Eula's out, but I think it hurts Sophie more than it hurts Sarah. I think Sarah has other connections to lean on.
But to go back to Sarah, let me just say one other thing about her with Adam, where, you know, we've seen such a, like, the fun side of Sarah. I felt like that Sarah was not, like, being funny with Adam. I think that she seemed, like, super, like, she has had it. That was Officer Sarah, I felt like, dealing with Adam.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
he was pushing her buttons. I think she seemed not happy. Like, this wasn't like smell my breath. Like, can I smell your breath, Sarah?
It wasn't a joke like that. Right. So, you know, the thing is, this is like a really hard part in Survivor where, like, 2 weeks in, you've just like had it. You're just hungry. You're tired of the game and you just want to get to the merge. So this is the part where, you know, it's sort of like how we all are with coronavirus right now, where we're 2 weeks in and we're really trying to be patient. And now we're starting to get on each other's nerves. I think that's what we're seeing. But, you know, I'm enjoying seeing Sarah. You know, and next week, if there's a merge, then it opens it up to more people. And I think that some of that craziness will subside a little bit.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see where like these groups go, because I feel like that, you know, in your season, you know, you had basically coming into the merge, you know, there was it turned out to be OK. It's starting off. OK, the heroes and the hustlers versus the healers, because they were the big group. And that, you know, sort of held for a couple of votes coming into the merge, where I think that this is really, really messy. And I think that taking Yule out of the equation, I think really, you know, splits that original Dekal into two different groups. And I think that we're coming in with like just a few like bunches of people, voting blocks.
Yeah, I totally agree. And my favorite seasons of Survivor are the ones that have, you know, the voting blocks. When did voting blocks start? That was like,
really,
I can't remember.
And Jeremy, I think, might be set up very well here, because it was really Cambodia was the first season where it was, you know, widely talked about.
Okay. So Cambodia. Yeah. So I love voting blocks when people are not sticking with their alliances from day one to day 39, but are mixing it up. Every tribal council, essentially, right? Every sort of reboot to decide who is in their best interest. Certainly as the viewer, it keeps it most exciting because we have no idea who's going to align with who, right? And I mean, of the people that are left, we could put them in many different groups based on their starting tribe, their second tribe, their season, their pre-existing alliances. You know, if I had to go out on a limb, I'm going to go out and say that ultimately, I think the game will be played by, you know, the seasons of the 20s versus the seasons of the 30s. But, you know, who knows? I'm excited to see how it goes. It's a great season.
You know, just in talking it through in terms of like where Sarah's connections are, you know, I was thinking about like, okay, well, Sarah is probably going to want to reconnect with Tony. And then, you know, Sarah and Sophie are very tight. But another real under the radar connection is that Sarah and Denise, I think, are also pretty tight. I think they're both from, you know, they're both from Iowa and maybe the same city also. I feel like that is a very under the radar connection, and we haven't seen them on the same beach at all this season. But I feel like that's just more where Kim was already tight with Sarah. So I feel like that the women of, you know, Sarah and Sophie and Kim and Denise, I think that they have a real framework. And then plus Tony and Jeremy, I feel, and then Ben also in tow. Like, I feel like that's going to be the alliance that's really going to control things at the merge.
Well, the other thing that'll be interesting is who comes back from the edge.
And who comes back from the edge.
Right, because that could very much throw everything up in the air again, also with information coming back of who do the people on the edge like, who's still in the game. That could, you know, we don't know, right? Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, so, I don't know. I'm excited to see how this is going to play out.
So I feel like
this
almost
is certainly VD Strong, right?
Yeah.
this is known as VD Strong to the end. Sorry, go.
VD Strong, yeah. I think that the new school kids, basically, that I think the people that are in trouble now coming in are going to be into this merge. Nick, Wendell, Adam, and maybe Michelle, by proxy. But I feel like that if anybody can sort of evade the target that might be on that group, I think it is Michelle.
I agree with that. But also part of it, I think, is because she's the woman. And the reason that I say that is sometimes people become interchangeable. And I think that in some sense, Wendell, Nick, and Adam, and I'm even going to put Ben in there a little bit, are a little bit interchangeable in that they were four seasons in a row men who won. Mm-hmm. And so they risk having this, and I'm just going to pick one, right? I'll pick Adam because he comes first mm-hmm. alphabetically. We want Adam out, but we know Adam has an idol or whatever is happening. We can't get Adam out. So let's just get out one of the other three. Mm-hmm. Right. I think we risk that happening. Whereas Michelle played a little bit of a different game.
Yeah.
She was a little bit earlier. So I think that she could not be lumped in with those sort of four new school guys who won their game. I would be concerned if I were them. And if I were them, I would certainly get together in a block and try and get out the other people. That's what I would do.
Okay. Chrissy, when we talk about old school players and new school players, that I feel like, you know, you played in season 35, but do you consider yourself to be a new school player?
Yeah, I mean, of course, right? I mean, I think that people mostly think of old school as 1 to 20-ish,
yeah,
roughly, right?
But
new
do you
school
feel like,
is like 20 to 40.
Is that how you feel like you play, though?
I feel... You know, again, do I think that the style of play has changed? I'm taking it off of the style of play. I think that I call them old school players, not because they played a different way. Of course, they played a different game, mm-hmm. but they are perfectly capable of playing a new school game. I just think sometimes it goes to who played around the time that you also played. I think that you just feel naturally connected to more of those people, right? Mm-hmm. I feel naturally connected. Me personally, I have met... You know, obviously Ben, Nick, Wendell, Adam, Michelle. I've met all them, right? Mm-hmm. I have not met Ethan, Amber, Rob, you know, like Yule. Like I look back
Chrissy.
To all the, right? Who have you met, right? So again, I'm changing it. I don't like your question.
Okay.
Because I think that the people who go out to play Survivor play the game that they are given.
Mm-hmm.
And the old school players played an old school game because it was an old school game. I think that they are perfectly capable of playing a new school game. And I think that they were voted out not because their skills were lacking, but because there were these other things around them that caused them to get voted out.
Okay. Chrissy, can you tell me a little bit about your book, The Winning Conditions? Because I really do, like this stuff. I really do enjoy reading, business books and hearing about winning strategies for businesses. Is there anything from Winning Conditions that you could apply to what's going on in the Survivor game?
Yeah. Okay. So a lot of what I talk about in Winning Conditions is that you need to consider how the work that you're delivering or the solutions or the ideas or whatever the heck it is benefits your business partners, benefits your colleagues, benefits your clients, your customers, et cetera, right? You want to really look at things from their point of view instead of necessarily saying, this is what it's going to do for me. Now, this is exactly how that's related to Survivor, right? If you and I are in an alliance and I want to vote somebody else out, I'm going to come to you and give you all the reasons that you want to vote that person out, right? You don't care about the reasons that I want them out. In mm-hmm. fact, I might not even want to tell you those, right? So I want to always make sure to get at it from your motivation, your point of view, using words that are inspiring to you to want to get somebody else out. So in the workplace, right, when you're delivering your work, for example, let's pretend you are giving your work to someone who likes to hear all sorts of stories about, success stories or whatever. So when you're delivering it to them, you don't want to talk about all the numbers and all the financials and whatever. You want to give them success stories of real people or ways that are going to motivate that person to say yes to you. So you want to stop for a minute and think, what's going to motivate that person to say yes to me? And then frame up your work in a way that's going to motivate them to say yes. I'll give you a little example. I talk about this very early in the book, and this is like a very, very simple idea. And it has to do with my first job. So I started my first job after I graduated college. And I started the very first day with this other woman. Her name was Rosalind. She was so awesome. Everybody loved her. I loved her. I'm still good friends with her to this day. And Rosalind and I, we really worked on exactly the same work, right? We had the same educational background. We had passed the same actuarial exams. And everybody thought that Rosalind was so freaking amazing. They actually called her the amazing Rosalind. Like literally everything that Rosalind did, they thought she was so great, right? And I'm like plugging away and I'm doing this great work and people could give two tooties what I'm doing, right? They don't care. And I loved Rosalind too. Like she was awesome. And I remember stopping for a minute and thinking, I'm going to just figure out what is going on here. And I noticed it was little things that Rosalind did, right? We were delivering the exact same work, but we were delivering it in different ways. So for example, when someone would say to Rosalind, hey, Roz, you did a great job on that project, right? Or good job on that project. What she would say is, thank you. I worked really hard on it. Or thank you. I learned so much from it. Okay. And when people would say to me, Christine, you did a great job on that project, I'd say, oh, no big deal. I just did what we did last year. Or, oh yeah, it was easy. Right. So what people got from our responses was that Rosalind was working on great projects that she was learning a lot on. And what they got from me was that I was working on easy stuff and I just did what we did last year, right? So what they started to do is want to give Rosalind more and more great projects, right? So she actually made them feel a certain way about her and about her work simply by the way she said thank you. And this is the idea, you know, in winning conditions is sometimes just the way that we respond to people makes them feel a certain way about us or the work that we're giving them. You know, this goes back to what I talked about with Michelle. Like, I love how Michelle is responding. People are putting her on the spot. Even there was an episode a few episodes ago where I think Rob walked over to her. She's sitting on a rock and basically like laid into her. I can't even remember what he said, right? He put her on the spot about, did you vote some way or the other? And yeah, she just looked at him and... Right. What happened there?
So this was right when Adam had come to Boston Rob and told Boston Rob about, hey, we're going to vote out Parvati. And I just want to let you know because I want to work with you after the fact. And I had talked about this a lot that week where I was talking about how that Adam might look at the game in terms of things that you're talking about of how do I create a win-win where I'm going to get out Parvati because I want that. But also let me create up a condition where Boston Rob can win. Also, he can also move along in the game and I'll protect him later on down the road. But that's not how Boston Rob plays the Survivor. Boston Rob only plays the game in a win-lose mentality of I get what I want and I don't care what you want. And so that was always going to be unacceptable to him. So he goes over to Michelle to say, hey, I already heard the plan. You know, let's vote out Adam. Adam already told me the whole plan. And she's like, no, that's not happening. And Boston Rob, come on. I already know.
Yeah. But what Michelle did is the way that she responded back to him was like brilliant because she responded back in a way that Rob needed to be responded back to, right? The way that she deals with Wendell is the way that she needs to deal with Wendell. The way that she deals with Nick is how she needs to deal with Nick. Michelle changes herself up based on the person that she's dealing with. And, you know, I think this is why Michelle won her game, right? Michelle sets up winning conditions, right? Because what she does is she's not thinking about what she needs. I mean, she is, but she's also thinking about how she needs to present her ideas or present her strategies so that the other person wants to say yes to her. This is how she gets to the end of the game. And you see it. You see it when she answers people. She answers people exactly in the manner that they need to be dealt with. And I think it's brilliant. But we can all do that in the workforce too. You know, I talk about things like if you're going into a meeting and your boss likes to be chatty, then you want to be a little chatty with them right before they start. If you're walking in when somebody wants to get down to business, you want to get right down to business, right? Don't be chatty if that person wants to get right down to business. But there's also things like looking for, you know, the big one I always say to people, what is the problem you're trying to solve? You know, did you ever have somebody come in and pitch an idea because they're going to fix something? Right. But you don't think that thing needs to be fixed. In fact, you think it's pretty great already. You know, so there's different ways that you can just kind of look at situations and set up the conditions that allow you to win. So anyway, yeah. I love my book. I think my book is super interesting. I think it works.
Yeah, well,
so anyway,
I love hearing about that type of stuff in terms of, you know, work and communication strategies, and especially in terms of Survivor. So I am very much looking forward to reading it when it comes. Although I really would appreciate an audiobook, Chrissy, if you could help me out with that.
I'm working on audiobook. Don't worry, I'm working on audiobook. So the book gets written first, and after the book is written, then the audio rights are sold. So because the audio, obviously, they need to see the completed book. So we are in copy edit phase and yada, yada, yada. Not interesting. But working on that. So hopefully I will get you an audiobook, Rob. And okay. I will get you a book. Yeah, so you
great.
Can check
great.
It out.
Chrissy. But, I have a lot of questions for you from the listeners of the podcast. A lot
excellent.
Of questions for you.
Okay, let's hit it.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. wants to know, how are the fire tokens going to pay off this season? What is all of this for, Chrissy? I got people asking me that all these different questions for you in terms of, because you are an actuary, that how do you explain the fire tokens? Do you like them? Troy Steinmetz, as an accountant, are there things that we could take from finance that might become fire token strategies?
Yeah, so I'm actually loving the fire tokens. I think this was a really great game dynamic. That said, I think they will work best in this season than they will in future seasons. And the reason is, right now, fire tokens are one of those known unknowns, meaning we know they exist, but we don't exactly know what we can turn them in for. And I think because of that, I mean, we do, right? So we have a menu. Right. This is a menu. Mm-hmm. I can buy a tarp for however many fire tokens, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't really know how they're going to come into play later in the game. So right now, people are thinking a lot about how can I accumulate as many fire tokens as possible so that I can potentially use them for something in the game. I think that once we see how the fire tokens play out during season 40, I think we could see some different dynamics in future seasons if the fire tokens come back. I think Jeff said that the fire tokens
are
coming back.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
They're coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. I like them a lot. The one thing that I don't care for with the fire tokens, but I think that Edge is not coming back, at least Jeff has said Edge is not coming back, is I don't care for spending the fire tokens on the Edge or you know, and sending the mm-hmm. sending the idols and such to people who are currently in the game. But I like it. I like the fact that when you're voted out, you bequeath, terrible word, mm-hmm. your fire token to someone else, because I think that also leads an interesting dynamic with who you vote out and how you vote them out to try to get their fire tokens. So I am absolutely loving all of it. Oh, let me tell you what. Sorry, I'm on a roll now.
You've been on one.
I get excited. Okay. What I loved, there were a few things that I loved about the fire tokens. One was I loved the task, I'll say, on Edge of Extinction about the, you know, bring the 20 logs back. Okay, that was an amazing scene. Okay, that was a very human moment with Ethan, but I'm just going to look at the task. I like the fact that this was a very difficult challenge that everyone had the opportunity to win a fire token if you wanted to. I also liked the notes that came in last night that said, okay, there's four that are hidden at the end of the trails. Everybody go, and whoever finds the first four, like, I loved that. Mm-hmm. So I like that much better than this random, you know, maybe there is an idol out there, and I don't know. I'm totally digging the fire tokens, and I'm as curious as everyone else to see how they play out in the future.
Chrissy, back in Survivor HHH, when you opened your bag and you had a immunity idol that Ryan had sent you that was good for one tribal council, if fire tokens had been invented, would you have told Katrina Radke, I will give you this idol to play tonight, but you have to give me your fire token? Would you have invented
okay.
that?
It is a great question, and the answer is, no. I mean, we were all voting out Katrina. So we were definitely all voting out Katrina. I know that episode one was set up to be a little bit of a concern. However, let's phrase that up differently. So, like, if Ashley had come to me mm-hmm. and said, and on, you know, and I would have, you know, said to, you know, would I have said to her, oh, you're getting voted out tonight, which was totally not true. We were never going to vote out Ashley. You know, would I have lied to get a fire token? Yeah, I don't know. No, not in the first episode. Not in the first episode. But see, I understand why Sandra did what she did. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm going back to, you know, 10 years ago on this podcast, we talked about sometimes you just do things because you're human,
yeah.
right? And it's not because you're dumb or unmotivated or undedicated or anything like that. Sandra is an awesome player. She just did that. You know why? Because she's a human being. Like mm-hmm. she is just a human being. She made a mistake in that one time, but yeah, you know, I don't know. I think what I'm curious to see is once we see how these fire tokens pay off, I think then the bartering is going to be very different in future seasons because now we're exactly going to know what we're trading for.
Yeah.
We don't know what we're trading for right now.
That's right. That's right. It's a terrible thing that's going on all over the world. I do think what, and who knows when they're going to get back to filming a Survivor season, but they were supposed to go into production on a Survivor season. I think it probably would have been underway by now. And I feel like that whenever the next group of survivors get to play, they will understand the fire tokens way more. I think it would have been frustrating probably better to have a season 41 being filmed already, but that it would have been frustrating to see people still not knowing what to do with fire tokens if they come back into season 41.
Yeah, totally. And so first of all, let me just do a quick aside and say that I left for my Survivor season exactly 3 years ago today. Today is my 3-year anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Survivor. Yeah, thank you. It was March 26th. But yeah, so that's the other thing. And I agree with you completely about the fire tokens is right now you don't know how many fire tokens are going to be in circulation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if I have one or two, that's a lot if in circulation is 9 or 10. But one or two is not a lot if what's in circulation is 40 or 50.
Mm-hmm. Like
we just have no idea. So if you've got one or two, they might not be as worth it to you, right? If there's like a lot, you might want to trade that off because you might say one or two in the whole scheme of 40 or 50 isn't going to be, you know, make a whole lot of difference anyway. So, I'm curious to see how this plays out. I am enjoying the fire tokens. I do like this new dynamic, and I hope that we continue with the ability to get them through the bequeathing and through the tasks.
Yeah.
I really, really like that.
Okay. So Andy Huber has a question for you. Andy from Twitter wants to know, all right, Christy would be a really good person to ask about how much currency should be in this economy. She might have a super reasonable and analytical answer. What are 29 tokens among 19 contestants? In my opinion, bordering on too much with 29 fire tokens total in the game. So now it's an interesting sort of setup where, you know, that we're seeing a lot of the fire tokens flooded into the game. Only one, to my knowledge, has been spent in that Tyson bought a jar of peanut butter. So are we getting to the point where are there more fire tokens with so many fire tokens in the game? Should people be adapting their strategy for the fire tokens? Do they become less important as more get into the game?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. And one of the things that I started thinking about last night is that, and this is why it's an all winners, right? Nobody spent their fire tokens on a tarp. Nobody spent their fire token, except for Tyson's peanut butter, right?
Yes.
But people who are in the game, right? They haven't spent it on more food. They haven't spent it on luxury items. I can't remember what else was on that
menu. I will add that the weather seems like it has been really, really great weather.
It
seems like very few
that.
Storms.
But curious enough, you know, I wonder if when they came up with this whole plan, if they realized that 29 tokens would still be in the game, right? Or did they think that more people would buy things along the way?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, do I think for me, do I think 29 is a lot? I do think 29 is a lot because the more tokens that are in the game or the more tokens that are given out, the less important your own tokens become, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they just gave 4 out last night on the edge. Meanwhile, Sandra sold her life in the game for 2 tokens, for one token, really, right? She, you know, one now, one later, right? So she got one token. But again, I don't know how much we're going to have to spend on them. I can't imagine something would be worth even like an immunity idol in the game or an advantage in the game after the merge. I don't know, 5 tokens? When there's 40 out there,
yeah.
There's 29. Yeah, I don't know.
Next week, we have the Edge of Extinction Returnee Challenge. And I do feel like that a lot of fire tokens are going to get wiped off the board with people buying. So if you have one fire token, you get like 10 less knots. If you have 2 fire tokens, then you also like have less pieces in your puzzle or whatever it's going to be. So I think that anybody that still has fire tokens on the edge is going to, use most of them up on advantages for that challenge.
Well, and let's talk about that's another, I believe, game flaw in the Edge, because then you look at someone like Yule,
yeah,
who came in and he didn't have an opportunity to win as many Fire Tokens as Natalie. Now, I love Natalie. I'm super glad that Natalie is set up with, you know, all everything that she has, because I would love to see her, she's one of the many people at the Edge I'd love to see get back in. But, you know, Yule is at a major disadvantage for lasting longer in the game than Natalie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just, I don't think that that's how the game of Survivor is supposed to work.
Right.
That when you get voted out sooner, you actually get way more advantages. But, you know, that's going away.
Yeah.
Hopefully forever.
Hopefully. All right. Well, let me ask you a question. So last night we saw where everybody was out looking for the fire tokens. Boston Rob had pocketed three of the fire tokens.
Such a great scene.
It was a great reveal. But there was a lot of talk about, hey, let's frisk everybody. We saw Boston Rob also, who has the idol. Everybody dump out your bags. Should Alan Ball be getting more credit for that? He was the first person to get somebody to strip to do an idol search.
I did also have flashbacks to Alan Ball and JP. Yes, except for that, nobody actually pulled down also their underwear.
Yes.
Right? I think we had a full-fledged underwear strip season. And you know what else, actually, Rob, that was like the third, like, dump out your bags, dump out your pockets we've seen this season. It's failed every time, right? We saw Denise, like, you know, dump out your bags, and she's hiding the idol in her bag. And I think Sophie emptied her pockets with an idol in her pocket. And Rob was great because I guess he had all the tokens in his pockets and he just quick pulled his pants down. Right. So, That strategy is a fail strategy.
Right. Yeah. It was weird. The Boston Rob thing, because it seemed like he had everything in his bathing suit pocket. So he just like took his bathing suit down and was like, all right, anybody can search me. I don't know who was going to search him. His wife's totally standing right there.
It was great.
I don't know.
It was great. I loved that scene so much because when you're a viewer and you're watching the game, most scenes are told chronologically and we get to see behind the scenes and we know where people found idols and we know what's going on and we watch these people and we're like, I can't believe you were so hoodwinked, right? We can't believe that those players out there are so dumb that they don't realize somebody's lying, right? That's usually how it is. What I loved about the scene last night is it showed the viewers at home exactly how the players are hoodwinked, right? We saw it play out. We're like, where the heck are the idols? Who has the idols? Are the three out there? Who's lying? And then you get to go back and you see Rob. And I think that it really goes, it really helped show how you can lie to people and they totally believe you, right? The viewers got lied to for a few seconds. I loved the reveal. I just loved that whole scene. It was great.
Okay, Chrissy. Mike Christensen wants to know, can you power rank your three fellow New Jerseyans on this season?
Oh,
okay. And okay, I believe I won't give you the quiz. I believe that would be Natalie, Tony, and Michelle.
And Michelle. And by power ranking, that means what order do I think that they would be going out in, correct?
You can rank them in any order you want.
Okay, so first of all, let me just say that one of my major pet peeves is every time I have said how much I love a player, I get 500 responses that say, but how come you don't love the other player? Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's like, you know, when people say like, I love cats and kitty cats and people are like, oh, how come you're a dog hater? You know, and like, mm-hmm. That's like so dumb. So, so I really hesitate to put them in line of how much I love all of them. Oh, they're all so great.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. How about this? Could you do something different? Could you give them like put them at exits on the New Jersey Turnpike?
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put them at how nervous I am right now for them to be voted out.
Okay.
Okay. So
don't be nervous for Natalie.
No, right. True. I'm going to say, assuming that Natalie gets back in the game. And P.S., you know that I have no spoilers. In fact, every time I talk to anybody in the Survivor community, it starts with, hi, don't give me any spoilers.
Same.
Totally. So first of all, I think that Tony's probably in the most trouble just because of his reputation precedes him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Michelle is in the least trouble because I think that we are seeing Michelle play an absolutely brilliant game. And, you know, Natalie, I don't know where we're going to rank Natalie. We'll wait until next week until we see if she gets back from the edge. If she gets back from, if she does not get back from the edge, obviously, then, you know, who knows? But I don't know. I have hope for her. We had some, we saw some great Natalie scenes early in the season. So, but I worry about Tony. However, I am loving watching Tony. I mean, Tony is just such great TV.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on Tony? We talked about this a little bit with Ben in terms of like, is he playing a different game? What do you make of Tony's third time out?
Yeah. I mean, I was really surprised that he did the Spy Shack business. Wait, was that last night?
That was last week.
Yeah. Okay. I was really surprised that he did the Spy Shack business because I think that was a little bit of his old antics that could get him in trouble. Although maybe only the viewer knew he was doing a Spy Shack, I guess, because he just kind of disappeared.
I think Sandra knew.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know, right? So I think he toned it down a little bit from Game Changers. He knew that he couldn't go crazy out of the gate, and now he's actually made the merge. And some part of, you know, all the Toniness is Tony. That's who he is. He is just big. He's boisterous. He's funny. He's, I think that's just Tony. So I like seeing the same Tony. I would love to, I mean, I'm glad Tony's still in the game. I love watching Tony.
Yeah.
So is this the same Tony or different Tony? I don't know. I mean, it seems like the same Tony every time to me, but
it seems like it's the same Tony, but he is like bursting at the seams, like where he's like, okay, I know I can't be running around and then going and looking for the idols nonstop. So he has to like, it's the same guy, but he is like really just chomping at the bit to get back out there and do the old Tony stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there's only a few players that we're just seeing a very different view of them than the last time they played. Ben obviously was one of them, right? But I explained why. I actually think that that was very strategic on Ben's part. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing a very different Kim, right? Oh my gosh.
Tell me about different Kim.
So Kim, the first time, I mean, Kim was on top of every boat. She was extremely strategic. She was very, you know, controlling in a good way, in a good strategic, positive way. I'm saying controlling. And now the view that we're getting of Kim is the underdog at the bottom. There was a scene last night that I actually had to rewind and watch it again because there, what is that called? Is that called like a Franken edit or something?
A Frankenbite
when Kim was giving a confessional and in the middle of the confessional, it changed to a Frankenbite that sounded so much different than the rest of the confessional. And it was something along the lines of I'm the underdog or I'm on the bottom or I'm crawling. And it was just very odd. And I remember thinking, why the heck did they give that to us? What was, you know, I don't know.
I was curious about why
not dominating the game or something.
Why did we see the, you know, Kim at this point talking about, hey guys, you know, we need to have a plan. Kim talking about this, she's nervous about how they need to have a plan going into the merge.
I mean, wait, what? That surprised you? Doesn't everybody have a plan going into the merge?
Sure, everybody has a plan, but we didn't see, you know, too much of anybody else talking about, you know, planning for the future. You know, we saw basically, you know, what was going on with Adam and Ben and sort of like, and that was a lot more about like the present. And like, we didn't see, you know, Kim and Denise and Jeremy talking about like, hey, okay, so we should vote out Tony. We should, you know, we saw more of them, that group in particular, planning for the future, which I just thought was interesting that we saw, foresight for that tribe as opposed to the other tribes dealing with the present.
Yeah. So it's interesting, right? We saw Kim talking about that, but just because we saw Kim talking about it and nobody else, I don't want to say that nobody else was talking about it. It just might not have been as interesting a conversation or something that was worthy of making the edit. But,
yeah.
Anyway, the point that I wanted to make with Kim, with having a totally different edit, is I think that this is Kim playing differently. I don't know. Maybe it's just the edit that she's getting, right? We're just seeing different sides of her. Again, I think that everybody who goes out there and plays all kinds of a game. They play a strategic game. They play a messy game. They play a loving game. They play a lying game. And it's just a matter of what ends up on the cutting room floor and what ends up on your TV. I think that just the parts that we're seeing of Kim right now, of this sort of underdog thing, is just, it's very interesting. You know, obviously we're seeing a different edit for Wendell as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Kim, because I think that she is playing a little bit of a different game. I think that she is playing from the bottom, in terms of where she played from the top the whole way through in Survivor One World. We had no idea, you know, how she would handle this situation of being at the bottom. But I think that she really handled being at the bottom masterfully, that she really, I think, has a game that's very conducive to sort of like, because I think that being on the bottom, I think, is a lot of people pleasing, of like just being sort of like staying out of the way, don't get on people's nerves, don't be top of mind. You know, eventually, if you can ride it out like she was able to do, she only had to go to, you know, two tribal councils before the swap, then a bigger target will pop up eventually if you're doing a good enough job of just, staying off of people's radar.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, right now she just needs to stay under the radar, and she's doing exactly what she needs to do right now until she is back into a situation where she can, you know, come up with the numbers again. So, she's playing a great game. I don't think we're seeing a lot of Kim right now. I'm hoping we'll see more of Kim once the merge happens.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay.
Oh my gosh. And also, sorry, this is a total aside, but every time I see her on my TV, her blouse is like perfectly ironed. Mm-hmm. Watch this next week. She has a perfectly ironed blouse. I have no idea how she looks.
Is that the fabric? Is that, does she end up going with something that's like?
No. Yeah, I don't know. But every time I see her, she looks like perfectly put together. Okay. So anyway.
Yeah.
Who are we talking about next? Okay. Or next question.
Okay. This is from Matthew Allen. Who would Chrissy align with this season? And who would you target? So we don't have to get into who you would target, but I would love to hear about who are the people that you feel like that you would have worked with in this season?
Oh, okay. So, I mean, obviously my first choice would be Ben, only because like I just loved playing the game with him.
Can we stop down on that? Because I think that that's an interesting question, because I think that that's probably not unlike, you know, Tony and Sarah, where it's not, it was not necessarily a, you know, 100%, you know, positive at all times relationship in the game. And so I think that that's interesting to talk about. So it's better to work with somebody, you know, warts and all, that you know, as opposed to somebody who, okay, I'm getting along well with this person, but I don't have the history.
So Ben and I both, I think we looked at the game in the exact same way, which is, this is a game. This is not real life. So we played the game together. I think that we complemented each other very well in the game. And I loved playing that game with him. Granted, he beat me, and we had a lot of times in the game that we fought, you know, acted like babies and whatever. But outside of the game, like, that was the game. Outside of the game, we are very close. He is an incredible human being. And so going back into the game, I think to go in with a person that you feel close to, again, we go back to, you know, Michelle and Wendell, they do have a prior relationship, and that means something, right? But then also to go in with somebody who you know that you can play really well with, I think that would have been a nice person to play the game with. If I'm not picking Ben, right, if I'm picking somebody I never played with, like, I would love to play with Adam Klein. Like, mm-hmm. he I like the way that he thinks about the game. Who else would I have? I mean, I would. I feel like such love for Parvati. I don't even know her, but when I look at how she is as a mom and her sort of view on life, I just feel like I love her as a person. So she's a person who I probably would want to play with, just because, I don't know. I feel like her and I would just get along really well. Who else would I play with? I mean, probably I could name a million people. I mean, Ethan, I feel like he and I are like the same age, and, you know, I don't know. So,
yeah.
A lot of people.
Let me ask you a question from Baby Andy wants to know. It seems like Denise is still not perceived as a giant threat. Do you think that her big move set her up well for the merge, or that she can go all the way? We saw Jeremy and Tony both talking about this all night, where Tony was just like thrilled, like, oh my God, Denise is a big threat. She took out the queen. She got a fire token. Oh, she's that. And Jeremy's like, what is Tony talking about? He's still a much bigger threat than Denise. So what do you think about Denise's threat level after what happened with Sandra?
Yeah. So first of all, her season is one of my favorite seasons of all times. I just loved it so much. And I was a little taken aback last week when Sandra said, you know, there are some people on this tribe who are threats, and she named everybody except for Denise. I was really kind of surprised about that. And I thought maybe my viewpoint is a little different than other people's. Yeah. And then last night we saw Tony, you know, talking about Denise's threat level. I don't know. If you ask me, I think that every single person out there is a threat for a different reason. Okay. Maybe not every single person out there. I might be able to pick three people who I don't think are threats, who I will not name on this podcast. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I think that Denise is a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
So, especially the fact that she's a therapist, you know, I think that she will be really good at sort of psychoanalyzing people and knowing how to respond to them. She stays very calm in situations. She's definitely a major physical threat out there. I thought she was a threat, but I thought she was a threat last week too. I loved her move against Sandra, even though I hated seeing Sandra going home. But the move that she made, that was a great move.
Yeah. I'm actually really excited to see how this merge is going to work itself out, because it's to me, I think this game seems like it's so unpredictable.
So unpredictable. I know. And in fact, I feel like the first hour after the merge happens is going to be major. It might even end up being who's sitting next to whom in the merge feast type of thing, where it happens. There's just like a mad scramble to try and get your alliances together. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how that goes.
Chrissy, do you think they will have an Outback merge feast?
My Outback merge feast was amazing. What did they have last time? Applebee's. Or something like that. So people can make fun of the merge feast all they want, but when you're out there and you have no food, I mean, you know, Rob, right?
Yes.
You don't care what it is that you're getting as long as you're getting something. I even enjoyed the Fiji pizza. Hey, wasn't there a reward last night that we didn't see?
Yeah, that was reported by, I saw Sarah had tweeted about, yes, it, and Dalton Ross talked about this. Yeah, there was a reward challenge, and they cut it out of the episode, which I'm totally fine if they do that. If it's not interesting, you don't have to show it to us.
I totally agree. And I, this is another thing, reason I'm loving the season is I think that the editing is really great, in the sense that we are getting, we're getting a lot about the relationships and the people. Part of it could have to do with the fact that these are returning players, so we already sort of know them, so we can kind of cut to the chase a little bit, because we know them already. But yeah, I'm okay with that too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, let's ask a question about, how about for Yule? Marlon Alvarado wants to know, wasn't Yule's strategy flawed from the beginning? Wasn't thinking that because he was unconnected, he needed to align with the new school players not a mistake? Preseason, I always thought he was one of the biggest threats and he needed to align with the non-threats. Do you think that this was Yule's mistake, that he ended up getting too close to those new school players? Do you think that he should have seen this coming?
No. So first of all, hindsight's 20/20. Okay. We can always say afterwards, oh, well, he made a mistake because he got voted out. No, I don't think that was a mistake. Yule may have felt that going in with the old school players who knew each other very well through various extracurricular activities, he may have felt like he would have been on the bottom of that alliance and the first to go, right? Of an old school group. Whereas going with the new school group, he may have felt that he might have commanded some sense of respect or awe or something like that, that they would want to keep him around so they could vote with Yule. But I think at the end of the day, what I'll say is, when you go out there to play Survivor, you will take whoever wants you, mm-hmm, right? Trying to make alliances with people that you feel comfortable with, who you think are going to stick with you in the game. So I do not think that was a mistake that Yule made. I think that he went out and did the best he could with what he could do.
Winston Kelly wants to know, favorite off-screen or off-season Ben Driebergen moment? And if you don't have one, I'll settle for a off-screen Dr. Mike moment.
Okay. So first of all, Ben is really, really hilarious. I mean, he would tell some really funny jokes, and he was really, really very, very funny. But I feel like I have better stories about Dr. Michael, okay, because Dr. Mike is so great. Okay.
All right.
So I'm already laughing. Okay, if you're going to be in lockdown with any person, Dr. Mike is the best person to do it with. Like, as bad as Survivor is, yeah. when you can play Survivor with Dr. Mike, I mean, it is like the best experience ever.
Yeah, we'll have to for the entire day. Check with Barry right now to see if that is the case.
Okay, so Dr. Mike would tell stories all day long about his patients and the things that mm-hmm. they would do to themselves that he had to correct. And all I will tell you is that he told us one story about things that gentlemen could hang from their nether regions.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being absolutely shocked. And he said, Chrissy, here's the rule. You just never hang anything heavier than a gallon of milk.
Okay. All right.
And I have never forgotten that in 3 years.
That's a good lesson for everybody. Yes.
A gallon of milk from their male
yeah,
parts.
Okay. Good
so
to know.
All the listeners out here, yeah, do not go home and try that. But even though Dr. Mike told me that it was okay.
I know a lot of people are not able to get to the gym right now. You're coming up with out of the box exercises. Okay. Good.
Yeah. It's really bad. Really bad. So anyway, I just always remember that from Dr. Mike. But Dr. Mike was hilarious. He would tell stories like that all day long. Like,
how many fire tokens for a gallon of milk?
Well, it depends what you want to do with a gallon yeah. of milk, right? Are you drinking it or are you hanging it? What are you willing to pay more for? I don't know.
Oh, my. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I'm trying to see. What?
Moving on. Next question.
What? How's the Breaking Bad? Good? Good, still good?
We can't recover from the last
one.
No,
I don't know.
Yes. Yo, Breaking Bad is good, bitch. Right?
Okay, all right.
No, Breaking Bad is awesome. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Wait, did we talk about this at the beginning? I'm watching Breaking Bad.
Yes. We touched on it briefly. Ryan Hudson wants to know, let Chrissy know that she's an amazing human being and friend, and her well wishes during the fever I had this past week made the difference. Did you send Ryan well wishes?
Okay, so I met Ryan Hudson because he worked in a store that sold fencing equipment, like, mm-hmm. you know, the sport of fencing, and my daughter is on the fencing team, and I went in to the store with my daughter to buy all this fencing equipment, and he was really great because he helped us, like, the whole time, and then I got home, and, like, 2 hours later, he sent me a note that was like, oh my gosh, I was totally fanning out the whole time, I can't believe it, I watched Survivor, and he never said anything to me the whole time, so we sort of became friends, but he sent me a note that said that he wasn't feeling well because he had corona, or who knows, right? Because you mm-hmm. can't get tested.
Right.
But yes, I checked in on him a number of times, and he is an amazing human being. He is like just a super fan of Survivor, and he was a really fun person for me to get to know through the show, and I now do consider him a friend. So I did check in on him a few times.
Okay.
That is true. That is a true statement.
Chrissy, what else do you want to talk about from this season of Survivor?
Okay, all I will say is one person who I think is also playing a great game that we didn't talk about yet is Jeremy.
Sure.
So, yeah, Jeremy, he's so interesting. When you watch him, he's definitely thinking, he's definitely contemplating. He's playing a little bit of a quieter game right now. I think that we're going to see him go far. That he's really... You know, who else have we not really talked about? I mean, I guess there's a lot of them that we haven't talked about, but Jeremy's a person that I'm definitely looking forward to seeing his, you know, hopefully his end game. But otherwise, I don't know. I'm totally loving this season. So I love this show. I still think it's the greatest show on TV.
Yeah, I get that. I even just from talking to you, from seeing your tweets, I totally get that you are, you know, just a big, big fan. And it's really nice to get to hear you talk about the game. Thinking ahead, Chrissy, have you given any thought to how the finale for the season might come together? You know, once upon a time, you were one of the finalists up on the stage when they did the live reunion. Obviously, there are going to be some major challenges that we're all dealing with right now. It seems like the live finale in the way that it's been done for, you know, 19 years seems out of the question at this point. Have you given any thought to how they might try to pull this off?
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly I have my own ideas of ways that I think they could save it. Do I think, what day is the finale? May 24th or something like that?
I don't think it's quite that late. From what I understand, I think it's probably like the second week in May, but who knows with the timing on anything right now.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that by the second week in May, we're going to be at a point where they could fly people out to be together. I think that is probably not going to happen and would be unwise to do. You know, so how are they going to do it? I don't know. You know, one way they could save it potentially is when was the finale of season one Borneo? It was sometime in August.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I don't remember what the date was, right? August 24th or 28th or something like that.
Yeah.
But theoretically, they could end the season.
They could.
And then who says that they can't get everyone together on the finale of or on the anniversary of season one and announce the winner then? And maybe they could put together another fun 20 years of Survivor. You know, I would love to see them do Survivor bloopers. I would love to see them do a whole thing of the living conditions on Survivor, of bringing people back to just like, you know, talk about stuff or talk about, I don't know, anything. I think they could put together, I think that could be a fun save. I think they could put together a 2-hour show of Survivor outtakes, Survivor bloopers, Survivor behind the scenes, how we make the show, how we, you know, all the stuff that you don't normally get to see. And then they could bring the cast back and then do the reunion special. Heck, and of course, you know, I'm one of the 584 survivors or however many people have played. You know, stick us all in the audience. Have a big party. I think there's a way that they could save it. And if they did it, like on the anniversary of Borneo's finale, I think that could really work out okay.
You could wait 3 months for we get to the final tribal council and then they tell us, all right, just wait 3 more months and we'll reveal the votes.
Well, I don't know. How else are they going to do it? Are they going to put everybody on Zoom?
I don't know. I think, you know, I thought about this a lot over these last couple of weeks that I think that what we have to sort of like disconnect is the live part of it. I think take that off the table. So, you know, a month from now, 6 weeks from now, are we at a point where we could, you know, at least, you know, get a camera crew to, you know, to Jeff and or to, you know, maybe could people get to like their local CBS station and potentially do some sort of like a satellite remote and record this thing with like the final three remotely to get some sort of the votes read and then maybe get a few interviews. I think it's probably a much more simple approach that we probably need to take, and I think that, you know, it's really going to be a very low quality to like sort of try to do this like, you know, everybody on a conference call. So but I think that there's potentially ways that they could do it where, you know, people don't need to travel.
Yeah. And I mean, I certainly think that holding that vote for 3 months or 4 months or whatever is not ideal. So I agree with you. Like in some way, maybe they're going to do that. But I think it's too bad because I think this has been such a great season and this is such an important season, right, in the history of Survivor, that to have it end just with like, I don't know, just like with people in different places, I think that would be a bummer. So I would love to see them somehow try and pull off something bigger later on when it's safe again. And I just think that, you know, again, if they sort of, I don't know, again, maybe they could just do that or the reunion show we're talking about 40 in person at a later time, even if they reveal the winner in the beginning of May. But I can't imagine any way that they are able to do a finale.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. We got a question from James Lim, who wanted to know how everything was going at your house. How have you been spending the time in quarantine? Sending my best from Boston. Besides the Breaking Bad, anything else that you could recommend for people? How you've been spending your time?
I have not been going out. I have been absolutely social distancing. So yeah, no. I hope that everyone else also is staying in their homes and staying away from everyone else who does not live in their homes. But no, otherwise, basically I'm staying in. I had to do one food shop in the 12 days that I have not left my house. And I was covered in head to toe in my hazmat suit and terrified the entire time that I was going to get the coronavirus. No, you know, otherwise waking up, you know, we're all doing our work all day. And then in the afternoon, you know, in the evenings, I'll say, you know, having dinner and just watching TV together. That's about it. You know, life is, I feel this stinks to be inside, right?
Yeah.
But I feel blessed that I am healthy, that my family is healthy. You know, my kids are still able to go to school. I am still able to work. My husband is still able to work. And a lot of people are not in that situation.
Certainly.
Right? A lot of people have lost their work, and which is terrible, you know, and don't know what they're going to do. So I don't want to sit here and complain about my situation. You know, yeah. It's okay for
the
me.
The boredom is temporary. We can all get through that. That's the easiest part of this.
Yeah, the boredom is the easiest part. You know, I really feel for these people who have lost their jobs and don't know what they're going to do next and don't know how long this is going to last, mm-hmm. right? That's a terrible feeling to not even be able to do anything about it. So I'm really hopeful that people just stay inside so that we can get through this quicker rather than slower. And so then everybody can you know, go out and be awesome. Yeah. As soon as this is done.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And Chrissy, so for people that want to get your winning conditions, then they have to wait for that also, right?
Well, you can pre-order it now. And P.S., I will say pre-orders, I'm just going to give the plug. Pre-orders
Please.
Are actually way better for... Do you know what a pre-order is? So pre-order means yeah. that you order it now and they send it to you, you know, like the day before it comes out. Pre-orders are actually great for authors. If you're going to buy a book, we much prefer that you buy it on pre-order than buy it, you know, buy it the day before it comes out or the month before it comes out instead of the day after. Because the way that they look at book sales is your day one sales is all your pre-orders plus your day one sales. And mm-hmm. that sort of dictates the rest of your trajectory. So to the extent that anyone can buy the book on pre-order, buy it now. The other thing is I want to give a huge plug for your independent bookstores, bookstores, even Barnes and Noble, they are hurting right now and they could really use a little bit of patronage. But if you want to get my book, you can either go to my website, which is christinehoffbeck.com, or you can just honestly look it up everywhere books are sold, amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com. It's on the Simon & Schuster website. You know, you just click on my author name, you can Google on it and it will come up. It's called Winning Conditions. So, oh, and there's a link in my every bio of every social media I have. My website is linked on Twitter, which is The Real Chrissy Hoffbeck. I think I have the Simon & Schuster link on my Instagram, which is, I'm sorry, Twitter is The Real Chrissy H. Instagram mm-hmm. is The Real Chrissy Hoffbeck. So, yeah, yes. It's all there.
Yes. Okay. I'm on your Twitter right now. In your bio, you have a hashtag actual actuary. What's actual actuary?
So that I think actually came from Josh Wigler. Mm-hmm. So back, I think that our friend Josh was the coiner of that term. Yeah. So back when I played my season, I was listed as a financial analyst. And I think that it was Josh who very quickly picked it up and was like, why the heck are they calling her a financial analyst when she's an actual actuary? And then so somebody along the line started hashtagging it actual actuary. And then in a lot of the press that I got throughout my season, they would always call me the actual actuary. So that's where that came from. So I think I said I'm the original actual actuary.
Okay.
Anyway,
all right.
I think that's, you know, our friend who we love so much, Josh Wigler. Giving him a,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Chrissy, so nice to get to catch up with you. I hope that we get to see you in person eventually sometime in the near future when we're able to put all this behind us. And, you know, we had such a nice time with you in Philadelphia. Was it your ring that I found?
Oh, my gosh.
Or was it your sister?
No, it was my diamond ring that fell. What did I go to hug someone or I did mm-hmm. something crazy? Yeah. And it flew under the chair. And I cannot believe that you found that diamond ring. So thank you so much.
This is like me and that basically like this was like Ben with Denise with like, hey, I'm going to teach you how to find. I'll teach you how to find a jewelry
totally.
That falls on the ground. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. And I had so much fun. I'm so bummed that New York was canceled. Obviously, I was going to come with my sister again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. My sister loves coming to those events. Her name is Ellen. But so the next time that you are in town and we're not, you know, having this sort of shutdown,
sure,
next
sure.
time you're in New York or Philly or wherever you are, I would love to come. I love your events. Rob, thank you so much for everything that you do for the Survivor community, because what you do is just makes the show is great, but what you do makes it like even better. So,
yeah. Well,
so many thanks.
Yeah, it's a nice distraction for everybody right now. And this was really nice to get to catch up, Chrissy.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Okay, thank you, and take care.
Be safe with your family. Be safe with the little guys.
Oh, we will.
Nicole.
We will.
Okay.
Everybody, there you have it. Chrissy Hoffbeck. I thought she was really, really great. She's never done a recap with me before. I thought she really nailed it today, talking about everything that's going on in the game. Hope you enjoyed this podcast and gave you something to do during this time. And so we've got a lot more coming up here this weekend. I'm going to talk with Krishma. Make sure you get your feedback questions. I love hearing from you guys. Love hearing your questions and comments that you have for the show. You guys always ask really great questions for the most part, And then also love to get the feedback on social media as well on what you're thinking about the show. So let's, you know, keep talking while all this is going on. And then, of course, we still have This Week in Survivor and The Wiggle Room coming up this weekend. So lots of stuff to get into, plus Tiger King as well. Make sure you keep checking back for everything else we're doing, but not to mention all the shows with the Taryn Survivor Update, the B&B, Why Yule Lost, and more. All up at robhasawebsite.com. So again, hope you're doing okay. Talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.